Hello, everyone, and welcome to our third Educators Collaborative Interactive call. Thanks, everyone, for taking the time to join us. And we're really glad that you're here. And then we have a special guest for our call today. As you all know, this is really the heart of our work as the Educators Collaborative, coming together and being able to share. And we're really excited to be able to continue this format. I'm going to start by letting Jonathan Code, our speaker and facilitator today, introduce himself, and then we'll go around as we usually do and introduce everybody else.
Okay, so hope you can hear me. It's me calling from Stroud in the United Kingdom. And a brief introduction to myself. It's probably, some people know me already. For some people, it's probably obvious that this is not a Gloucestershire accent coming down the wires. It's Canadian. But what brings me to be speaking from Stroud is a little, I'll give a wee background here. I have been in the UK for 14 years. I came from California. I was in California until 1999. Had just finished studying at CIIS, doing my undergrad degree, and came to the UK where I worked for 14 years at a land-based college in southwest England called Ruskin Mill Trust. If anybody doesn't know about it or wants to check it out, there's a trust has a very good website. And Ruskin Mill Trust, I worked at Ruskin Mill College where I developed a craft workshop in soap making. And my work there was really looking at how to weave the indoor and the outdoor classroom and developing a herb garden for aromatics and colors and dye plants. And that was a big part of the work, trying to bring the two together. I also taught drama and directed theater productions for 9 years there. And 3 years before moving on to where I am now, I worked in staff training and staff development. And one of the tasks I had there was to develop a course, an introduction course in biodynamics to a very large group of staff, many of whom have had no background in anthroposophy. We're working in the trust for with a number of different tasks, and that was a very interesting process to do to try and come at biodynamics through not really being able to present a lot of theory or anthroposophical background, but really in a way through experience. And that was for a large percentage of the 600 odd staff in the trust. And over the years, I've taught in biodynamic apprenticeship trainings over here in the UK, partly on block courses and partly at Emerson College. And throughout that whole time, I've been bringing my interest in phenomenology, alchemy, integrative education, and transformative education. And in 2012, I completed a master's thesis where I set out to explore how a biodynamic approach with a bit of a focus on the preps, how that can be understood in the context of epistemology and the philosophy of science and education. And that I continue to work over here in education, and hopefully we'll see some folks in Kentucky because I will be coming to Kentucky in November. So, Taya, that's a bit of an intro.
Great. Thanks so much, Jonathan. So now I'm just going to go around our virtual circle we have spanning the globe, and I'll just say your first name, and then if you could say your name, if your full name, if you want to share that, and your where you're calling from, then we'll just go around the circle so we all know everyone who's here. So let's start with Susan.
Susan Kurz here in Jamestown, Rhode Island.
Corey.
It's Corey Eichmann calling from Durham, Ontario.
Anne.
Anne Roussel from Quebec.
Noah.
I'm Noah Marquis from Hillsboro, Oregon.
Leah.
Leah Walker. I'm in Northern Indiana.
Rachel.
Rachel Schneider from Hawthorne Valley in the Mid-Hudson Valley, New York.
Stefan.
Oh, this is Stefan Schneider, also from Hawthorne Valley in the Mid-Hudson Valley, New York State.
Malcolm.
Malcolm Gardner, Columbia County, New York.
Jean-Paul.
Jean-Paul Cortens, also Columbia County, New York.
Laura.
Hi, Laura Riccardi-Livers in Loretto, Kentucky.
Elaine.
Elaine Ardine, and it's a beautiful day in Ontario, Canada, and I'm here with my husband, Tom Waller, so there's two of us here.
Hi there, Tom Waller here in Elmtree.
Rosemary.
Catherine Anger filling in for Rosemary Taylor from Earth Haven Farm in Thomasburg, Ontario.
Henning.
Yeah, this is Henning Zamstorf on Locust Island in the state of Washington.
Karen.
This is Karen Davis-Brown from Nashville, Tennessee.
Lloyd.
Lloyd Nelson, Western Colorado.
Mark.
This is Mark Ross from Elora, Ontario, Canada.
Great. So thanks, everyone, and you'll have more of a chance to introduce yourselves to each other if you haven't met in your small groups later. But before we do that, Jonathan is going to introduce the topic and give some leading thoughts before we have our discussion. So follow you, Jonathan.
Okay, thanks. So just to set us up for some exchange with each other, which I have sent out, I think Taya sent out ahead of time, in the form of some questions to which I would call gathering wisdom, I hope, and sharing questions. This is not an authoritative presentation. It's food for thought. So in just setting the scene, I think, for what I want to talk about is going a little bit back to my own process. Maybe we'll just touch in briefly on this quote that I sent around. That's on the back. It's actually on the cover sheet for the Evolution of Consciousness Studies in Polarity. It's a book which is a tribute to Owen Barfield. Various different people have contributed to that book, David Bohm, and there's an interview with Barfield. And anyway, this quote on the back cover is something that has really seeded something of this study. Nothing is more needful at this very moment than a clear understanding of and realization of polarity. It is more than an arid paradox. It is a mystery as it begins to be experienced in imagination. The world of becoming, it is what waits for us outside the hermetically sealed inner and outer worlds of Descartes. Polarity does not try to take opposition away. Mind and matter, man and nature, conscious and unconscious, subject and object, all remain apart in tension. We don't ultimately choose one of the contraries over the other or bring them together at last in a climactic embrace or fusion. Any resolution of opposites would mean the disappearance of one through its engulfment by the other, or else a denial of the original opposition through some philosophical or verbal sleight of hand. So I offered this into the space because it's a subject that has gripped my attention for some time. It seems interesting to me to explore the idea of polarity. How do we understand polarity? And if it doesn't offer something of a stepping off point or key point for understanding something of what might be being proposed in BD and also actually in other works of Steiner, in both the medical work and the education work. But to come at it, I'm just going to share a little bit of my own journey. I came into soap making largely because somebody popped out of an office one day and asked me if I would start teaching soap making, because he was moving on to do another job in Ruskin Mill Trust. And something in me said, yes, I'd love to, even though I hadn't a clue. I didn't know how to make a bar of soap and probably wouldn't have been able to make one to save my life. But something gripped me, and before long I found myself in a room with three young adults with varying different learning challenges or opportunities, and teaching soap making. And in order to get inside that whole process, we started to make potash and burn wood to collect the ash, to collect the salts, and started to get animal fats, which were available because this workshop was situated on the BD farm at the mill, and to render tallow. And really what's happened to me was kind of a bit of a diving into substances was my entry point. And this mystery, this quote talks about the mystery of polarities. And there was this mystery in the soap making in that I often asked a group of people, I still teach soaping, and I often start with the question, who made the first soap and how did they make it? Because it's not immediately evident how this comes about. If you just take some animal fat and some wood ash and mix them together, you get something which we often call ashy fat or fatty ash. And there's no real process of transformation that comes about. You actually have to take the potash through a process and the fat through a process before you end up with things that are actually, from one point of view, contraries. They actually don't have a relationship to each other. And the fat repels water, and the potash mixes with water. And anyway, I found myself for many years playing in this world. And while playing in this world, I would also find that in a group of three young people, I'd often end up with this kind of remarkable situation where one person would come in using the exact same recipe and end up with something hard as nails and caustic enough to almost strip paint off the walls, and somebody else using the same recipe would end up with something very oily and kind of gushy and something that kind of almost walked off the table. And I ended up also exploring this whole relationship to why is it that we're working with the same substances and the same recipes and ending up with so many different products at the end result. And this also opened up for me something between a dialogue between substance and person, or process and person. And already I started to realize that even though one can understand what we were doing in soap making from a chemical point of view, there was something bigger at play. And this then led me to explore the world of plant alchemy, which was something that still occupies me. It occupied me quite intensively for a number of years. And in plant alchemy, there's a little echo of the soap where a plant is taken apart in a very particular way under a series of steps and processes. And those processes in the end lead to what alchemically was referred to as the sulfur, or the volatile oil, the essential oil on the one hand, the salt on the other, which is essentially the same salt I was working with in soap making. And whereas in soap making, water was needed to bring these different substances together in the plant alchemy, there's another mystery shows up, which is alcohol, because alcohol shows up as the agent of transformation to bring the salt and the volatile oil together. And this occupied me for quite some time. On the one hand, trying to really get to grips with the different processes involved. And in teaching it, too, I taught a course in this process on Orcus last February, and different things showed up in the process. And at one point, in trying to extract a salt through a particular process, the question came up, well, why don't you just put water on the ashes and take the salt out that way? Why are we evaporating the water and bringing it back down again? And this whole complex thing where it would be much easier just to go through a simple process of extracting the salt. And all of these questions led to me to really start to dig into, on the one hand, the ideas that I have brought with me through my education in chemistry and science, and that all of a sudden what started to show up was that there was a big difference between where the substance came from and the process that the substance went through in order to be available for use in this kind of plant alchemy process. And all of a sudden, something started to loosen a little bit for me in terms of this, what I would call now, dynamic that was couched in these substances and the language that came to be used with them. And I started to then think about how would these, or would these kind of processes also shed light on what's happening in biodynamics? And this is not a new question, of course, because we have Dennis's massive kind of opus of work, which is exploring this in great detail. And for me, it came out of this route through soap and plant alchemy into what is going on here, and how can we actually engage with the difference between a duality and a polarity. And something that for me has been showing up in there very strongly is that duality seems to speak of a twofoldness that has a certain presencing of maybe two entities in a relationship. And it's interesting that in the history of science for a very long time, there is a kind of a twofoldness in this alchemical world. And for a long time, there's a sulfur and mercury theory, and the salt, sulfur, mercury really comes about through Paracelsus working in the 1500s and working very strongly in a medical or therapeutic domain. So I became interested also in this third principle that shows up, that something seems to be shifting from thinking in a dualistic way or engaging in dualistic type of relationships to something emerging in this polarity where there's a third mediating or third principle, which alchemically is there to bring about a marriage, is how that would be referred to from that perspective. And this leads me to then working in the context of biodynamics, and I became interested in the question of how often in the biodynamic work we come across what I would imagine are polarities, or could be imagined as polarities. Because all of a sudden, in the agriculture lectures, Steiner seems to be leading us into a space where we can't talk about the earth without talking about the cosmos. We can't maybe engage with silica without also calcium coming into that frame somewhere. And then we find in some of the geology work that clay presences itself. So these initially pairings start to emerge, and I become and am very interested in how in our work as educators in biodynamics or as practitioners in biodynamics or both, we work with these both practically for me that sometimes means taking plants and burning them and cooking them and fermenting them and bubbling them and drying them and trying to make sure that this all doesn't impinge on family life too much, which is probably another polarity somewhere in there. And how do we work with these in an educational context? Because to go back to the Barfield reference, it's pointing to, and if I think about Barfield's whole opus of work, there's something very potent being pointed to here that is not just a change of practice, but it's a change of consciousness. is what I read from what he's positing there. And those are always interesting questions for me as an educator to say, well, how does one move and how does one work in such a way that these might be graspable and therefore applicable? Now, in the lead up to this talk, there's been already two contributions, which I'm very grateful for. Rachel Schneider has given me, I hope she's okay with me saying this, but Rachel's given me something that she's written that comes out of a consideration of polarity in one of the conferences in Dornach. And Hugh Lovell also wrote, he wrote to Thea in advance of this talk. And I think it's, I won't read everything that Hugh wrote. He said because of time differences between Australia and here, he can't be here. But I'll just read a little bit of Hugh's because I think it contributes to the fact that what sometimes seems like a bit of a self-evident theme or conundrum or puzzle, or maybe it's not a puzzle because it seems self-evident, maybe is has more in it to chew on. So Hugh praises this with a bit of background in his studies of science, but I'll just read this because I think it's interesting. And I now quote Hugh, having said that I look at what we consider polarities in biodynamics, such as night and day and cosmic and earthly forces from which are in atoms, he says, I wonder, full stop. Silica is responsible for the capillary action in plants that carries calcium and other cations in the lime complex into cell division and growth and filling out plant forms. Silica is nonpolar and covalent in its chemistry. The lime complex, on the other hand, is charged and actually involves electron transfer in its chemistry. In a chromo, the ionic lime reacts with the filter paper while the covalent silica and carbon travel to the outer boundary of the picture. So just to move a little bit on into what he's presenting, it says, Hugh says, lime and silica are a duality rather than a polarity, even though we see them working with polarities, kind of like electricity and magnetism, referring back to his earlier bit. But when silica works with Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, how can we treat this as a polarity to lime when it works with Mercury, Venus, and the Moon? So I would like to just acknowledge that Hugh is contributing to something which opens up questions, which we may have formed different understandings of ourselves and bring into our work in different ways. And what I was hoping that we could engage with in small group dialogues are a few questions. And I'll precede this by saying that this is ongoing research for me. That's something I'm carrying forward. And little emails through from Australia and contributions from Hawthorne Valley are much appreciated. If anybody out of this conversation wants to put pen to paper and contribute to this whole question of polarities, it would be much appreciated. And if you do so, please indicate whether you're happy for that to be sent around to others in the conversation. So to come back to small groups, if you could talk about the following two questions in our first breakout. And the first being, in the context of biodynamics, is there a particular entry point that you have to the theme of polarity, cosmos, earth, silica, calcium, moon, sun, salt, sulfur? What for you is a particular point of entry, if you have one? And how do you as an educator work to introduce this deceptively simple term to your students or participants or co-workers? So, Thea, if I can hand over to you, the theme of that first small group dialogue is based on the question, do you have a particular entry point, cosmos, earth, and how do you work with that as an educator in that context or practitioner?
Thanks. And before we get into the small groups, I just wanted to see if anyone has any questions either about what those questions are getting to or anything else you talked about, if anyone has a question they want to ask before we go into the small groups, if you could just press 1 on your keypad, then I'll turn your mic on and you can ask. Rachel, go ahead.
I wonder if, Jonathan, you could say a tiny bit more about how one could distinguish a duality from a true polarity.
I think this is a great question, and I think that in some of the readings that I put out as suggested readings, there's a bit of grappling with this. One way that I would come at that would be to say that if I come back to the examples that I've been working with, my understanding of this, because this may grow and it may grow through this conversation, is as following, that in the plant alchemy or in the soap, there are the substances that are involved are what I would call polarized in a number of different ways. One of them is just, we could almost say phenomenologically, that if we're working with a salt has a very particular characteristic in that the salt, and if you want to bring a picture to mind, picture table salt, but picture it as a crystal rather than as the ground up salt we get already in the salt shaker. If you picture a salt crystal, we have a very clear form. Sodium chloride will always come out as a cube. It doesn't matter how many times we dissolve it and bring it back down again, it's always going to come back in this cubic form. And if we explore substances in relationship to these different processes, salt has this very clear characteristic of having a relationship to water on the one hand, in that it will dissolve in water, give away its form, and for sense purposes, it will disappear. But if we take the water away, it will come back again into a clear form. So salt has this relationship, if you like, and it could almost sit comfortably between the fluid nature of water and the very definitive physical manifest form of a crystal. If we try and hold a blowtorch to salt, if we try and light salt on fire, it's a frustrating experience because you can hold a match to it, nothing happens. You could light a blowtorch to it. And what will likely happen is the salt crystal will break apart because of the water of crystallization that's in it, but it will not combust. It won't light on fire. It's almost as if salt is resisting the kind of the fire combustion dissipation pull, and yet it will do so if it's in contact with water. Set against salt in a picture of the plant work, a volatile oil has a very, very different relationship to water. On the one hand, it won't mix with it. It maintains its own integrity, and actually it floats on top of the water. It's almost indicating by its nature that it has a tendency to lift away from the fluid, and it has a tendency to lift away from the physical or the earthy. And yet, if it burns, if it's exposed to heat, it burns, and if it's not exposed to heat, it nonetheless dissipates of its own accord. It vaporizes. And so in that picture of, if we look into the realm of substance with that question, we could say, well, I'm calling that a polarity because of their different, the different ways that they both come into form and the ways they go away from form, out of form. And if we try and bring those two things together, we just get oily salt. We get nothing that actually intermingles or merges or mixes together. They have such different characteristics that they remain in a kind of antipathetic relationship to one another. They stay apart. There's the mystery of the alcohol that comes into that in between those two, is that alcohol was known as fire water. So alcohol has this mystery about it that if you take a match to it, it burns. But on the other hand, it's in a fluid state, and the salt crystal will dissolve up into that alcohol. It seems to be able to lift the alcohol, but it also can bring the oil back into a mixture in relationship with the salt. My understanding of polarity is, on the one hand, the oil is pointing to this realm that in projective geometry we would call the periphery, or we would call the expansive pole, in which there is the tendency to dissipate, expand, and move away from our position of observation, certainly on the Earth. Salt, on the other hand, has the tendency to crystallize, to come together, to form, to consolidate. And those two gestures or dynamics are, in my understanding, what we could call polarized. And the question that Rachel poses, though, I think comes to a bit of a crucial point in the question of what differentiates duality from polarity. And on the one hand, you could say that the duality is sometimes present as well day and night. Two things are dual, are opposites, and they're, the fact that they are opposite in quality and twofold gives them this property of duality. I'm exploring the possibility that is rather that it's just a matter of what it is that we're looking at, night and day, or cold and warm, or cosmos and Earth in a dual way. It's actually, there's something comes in which I think Barfield is pointing to, that if we start to work imaginatively with those things that we are engaging, and the imagination brings them to their dynamic. So when I talk about salt can be seen as a substance, a static form, if we think about it. But if we engage with the salt process imaginatively, something starts to happen because a dynamic emerges, and that dynamic has a very different relationship to what was at another time its dual. Now, I don't really know how much one can kind of nail the difference between duality and polarity without going further into other kinds of examples. My doorway has been to say, well, what is happening in these processes? And Hugh is pointing to the fact that maybe it's again, a bit more complex. And Hugh is wanting to say, I think lime and silica are dual rather than polar, because of the way that they're behaving in the plant or in processes in nature. To me, there's a question here, which is why I talk about the element of consciousness as a player in here, is there a difference, and I would pose this as a question, is there a difference if we work imaginatively with the substances that we're seeking to understand, and if we're looking more with, let's say, the function of the intellect or an analytical view? And I would propose that in certain ways, the intellect has given us the gift of being able to say either or, this or that, this is not that, whereas the imaginative way of thinking allows us to say, how is this moving, how is this becoming, and how is that in relationship to another process that we have to start to think almost thinking the two things at the same time, embracing this space of difference at the same time. That's a stab at Rachel's question, but it may just be a stab.
Thanks, Jonathan. Are there any other questions before we move into the small group conversations? And we can have more discussion after, so this isn't your only chance, but if anyone has something they'd like to clarify before we move into the small groups, just press 1 on your telephone keypad. Okay, I'm not seeing any more questions. There's one more. Hold on here. Martha.
That was a mistake.
Oh, okay. So, Martha, you... Okay. but you, I think you joined us a little bit after we did all the introductions. Do you just want to say your name and where you're calling from?
Sure. Martha Loving, and I'm calling from Burlington, Vermont.
Great. And then, Walter, you didn't get a chance to introduce yourself either. Your mic's on.
Hi, this is Walter Mora. Usually I'm from Ecuador, but I'm actually in the States right now, D.C.
Is there anyone else who didn't get a chance to introduce themselves at the beginning? If you didn't, please press 1. I think we got everyone now. Okay, so so you're now in groups of 3. We have one group of 4 with Tom and Elaine on the one phone line, because that's how it ended up, because we have 19 people. So when you speak now, you'll be able to hear the other people in your group. And Jonathan, could you just say again what we're focusing on in this 20 minutes?
Yeah, sure. So in the pre-email that I sent out, there was a number of questions, and I'm just trying to narrow it down so that we've got something we can focus on. Rachel has presenced one of the kind of pre-questions: how is polarity different from duality? And there, you know, this actually may be something that you want to follow up further. But my question that I proposed you talk about is: in biodynamics, we were presented with these themes, which are, I'm proposing, polarically related: cosmos and earth, silica, calcium, moon, sun, salt, sulfur. And the question is there a particular entry point that you have, as an individual working in biodynamics, is there a particular entry point that you have? And how do you work with that as an educator when you are seeking to or working to introduce that to your students, participants, or coworkers?
So we'll have 20 minutes for this round. I'll sound a bell 5 minutes before the end so you have time to wrap up, and then we'll have some sharing out of the small groups, and then we'll have another round of small group conversations after that. So go ahead. You have 5 more minutes, so you can wrap up your conversations and start thinking about anything you would like to share with the whole group.
Okay, Taya?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So I hope you've had a chance to talk with each other and explore these ideas that we're putting out there, or explore the difference between duality and polarity, or how you work with them. Now is an opportunity for us to have a bit of a harvest and hear back from some of the groups. So if you would like to share, please indicate to Taya.
Karen.
Yeah, I'm not really speaking for our group, but this was like an aha moment kind of at the end of our conversation, because I had brought the duality polarity of substance and substances and forces. But what I realized at the end is a really fundamental one is really space and time, because we were, you know, if we talk about substances, but then we talk about processes and where does forces, you know, how does forces play out in all of that, then... So that was a really important moment for me at minute 19. So.
At minute 19, well, great. They often
it's
come.
Okay. Future. It's for the future.
Yeah, they often come at that moment, but they leave an opening. Yeah. Great. Thank you.
Stefan.
Oh, boy, you saw my number. That's not good. Well, we had a great conversation, Elaine, Tom, Martha, and myself, and... thank you, Jonathan. I'm probably more confused and have more questions than when I went into the call, but that's probably good. The one thing I wanted to share is it occurred to me during the course of our conversation where we also sort of contemplated and struggled with the new question, what's a duality, what's a polarity? But one thing that came to my mind and then we talked about a little bit is in the Ag lectures, when Steiner introduces the two spray preparations, there's a section that I've been puzzling about for quite a while when he says the 500 pushes from below and mm-hmm. the 501 pulls from above.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I read it, my first reaction is, why the heck doesn't the 501 push from above down and the other thing pushes from mm-hmm. below up? So anyways, I just put that out there as a question or as a thought that occurred to me, and I don't know if it's related to the theme, but we talked about it.
Right. Yeah, very interesting. Thanks very much, Stefan. Anybody else want to share?
Rachel, did you want to say something?
Yes. Our group distinguished some places. Again, we weren't sure in the beginning, or maybe even now, a duality from a polarity, but certainly what came up were some of the duality polarities were the idea of an entry point in the BD preparations themselves that they had the substances themselves could be looked at in duality or polarity that way. It's a good way to work with it. And the planetary influences could be seen as dualities or polarities. And that bringing consciousness as a third element to the making of the preparations adds an element in, is the way it was phrased, that takes it to another place.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started to work with that idea, and then some other polarity dualities, thinking and willing, in as part of our nerve sense and metabolic poles, and the idea that of turning something inside out as being related to a polarity, so the shape of the bones in the limbs and the head having almost polaric shapes and allowing for a more reflective, a more active way of being even. And also the polarity of nature and culture with agriculture in as a again a mediating sort of third force, if you want. And then a very interesting thing came up, and that was came from Malcolm, actually, the idea that rather than starting at the two ends, beginning with the idea of rhythm and as a force that that creates a tension field between what would be a duality in a passive state, but in reality, in a living state, the efforts of rhythmical back and forth creates a living tension that creates a polarity, and that in reality, the world is kind of threefolded. We just can't see it that way. And so because we have this certain kind of consciousness, we fall out of the living trinity of things into these dualities. So you could look at it more as dualities are the way we see the world because we can't engage in that living third imaginative sort of rhythmical situation, which the planets are doing everywhere we see rhythm. I guess we are seeing living polarities is what Malcolm was suggesting in a way. So we, you know, kind of talked about that for a while, thought it was interesting. So the final thought is that what a duality is when a living polarity that's mediated through rhythm falls out of
mm-hmm.
of life.
Great picture. Yeah, I think that's said much more eloquently than I was trying to get at in an answer to your question. But it's a really beautiful way to come at the whole question of duality and polarity, which puts us in the mix again, which I think is crucial. Puts the human being as a player in the mix. Interesting. Anybody else?
Corey, do you want to say something?
I pressed the one before Rachel started. Rachel was speaking so much, one thing that I brought up in our conversation was this the question of the duality or polarity, and what it seemed to me was that without that third element, a polarity becomes a duality. That that third sort of mediating, moving, rhythmical third element can turn a duality into a polarity. But I thought it was beautiful the way Rachel was saying it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Great, thanks, Corey.
All right. So we just have about 15 minutes left in the call, so I want to make sure we have time for the second part. Maybe we can move into that, and then anyone else who wants to share something will have a few more minutes to share at the end of the call.
Yeah, so the second part is, again, just keying off some of the questions I sent out beforehand, is, and maybe this is a bit of an obvious one now, but, maybe we'll still have a go at it. Do you think that including the aim of, and I put these in kind of inverted commas, do you think including the aim of understanding or realizing the principle of polarity has significance for our practice in biodynamics? I say practice because maybe that's also trying to point at something that if we go in the direction that Malcolm and Rachel and Corey have touched on, there's, it's interesting to me in working in the places I've worked in the UK, I worked in two quite contrasting educational settings. And my experience has been that in our apprenticeship scheme, we often have, and I apologize for generalizations, but we often have people who have quite consciously chosen a path through the hand or the will, if you like. They really want to come and work strongly into biodynamics practically. They want to learn through the will. They want to learn through practical tasks. They want to engage. And quite often will come through a process, and an apprentice will maybe come up and say, well, I'm learning an incredible amount, and it's really changing me. I know how to make the preps and work the farm, but I would actually now like to also understand why am I putting this substance in this animal organ? Why am I doing this at a particular time? And one kind of question can emerge, if you like, out of this deep practical knowing that wants to maybe grasp it a bit more in consciousness. And then this is often quite contrasted by my other work, which has been at Emerson College, which generalization again has tended to attract the kind of student who wants to understand the theory first. They really want to say, well, I need to understand this. And there's often a kind of a movement from an educator's point of view to, bring it down into the practical and into the practice. And I've quite enjoyed actually working in the two different settings that have this kind of these gestures or qualities to them. And this last question is about, is there a role for us kind of grappling with this idea of polarities, not just as an idea, but how do we facilitate this so that this little, an aha moment comes about, and that aha moment opens us into something. It's a broad question, but do you think this research inquiry, chewing on the concept of polarity, contributes to our work as educators, or could contribute to our work as educators? And I think, Taya, we have 5 minutes maybe for that before we check in.
Yeah, I think we could do, yeah, about five to 7 minutes on that topic. So you're still in the same group of people, and I'll bring a bell in 5 minutes, and then we'll have another couple minutes to wrap up and then harvest again. So we'll just have one more minute. All right, so we're going to have a little bit of a time for harvest now for everyone. We just have 5 minutes left in the call, but I also want to let you know that if anyone wants to continue talking after we get to the end of our time, we do have space for that to happen. So if you're eager to not stop talking, then there will be more time to do that. But let's move into some harvest with the full group first. Lloyd.
Hello. Well, that was great. We had a great discussion just now. And, you know, if we look at these polarities in biodynamics, I see that there are so many amazing polarities just in, you know, the two main preparations of, you know, 500 and 501, and some of them being, you know, light and dark, morning, evening, day, night, in-breath, out-breath, cosmic, earthly, winter, summer, or spring, fall, etheric, astral, you know, growth and decay or death and life, and the four elements. So we can go on and on, and understanding all these different polarities is absolutely what I, out of our discussion, you know, it came out that this is crucial in that, you know, as the bigger picture of what we try to do as biodynamic practitioners, create a balance within the ecosystem. So we are working with these polarities, these extreme polarities, to create this balance. We are the mediators through our work, and the biodynamic preparations are our tools. So understanding all of these manifold, many, many different polarities that are going on within each of the preparations really gives us some incredible strong tools to be the mediators, the balancing factors, and the co-creators here on Earth.
Great. Thanks, Lloyd.
Leah.
Hi there. I just want to express an appreciation, actually, of the conversation itself about polarities and just recognizing that for me, I'm trying to develop more facility in being able to move between the two or perceive the two, work with the two, and I've just heard that described, and I guess I just want to point back to what Rachel was saying so beautifully of that living force that we have trouble perceiving, I guess, or have trouble recognizing that it's there, and it feels like the more we can develop the capacity to move and be flexible in ourselves and bring that to students, to adult learners, then we're serving that developing capacity to perceive forces, something like that.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you.
Anything you want to add, Jonathan, before we conclude?
Just to reiterate, really, that if kind of following on from Hugh's, well, actually, Rachel started it, but following on from Rachel and Hugh, where all of a sudden this theme seemed to bring up contributions that ended up in black and white on paper. I don't know, that's probably a duality, but it's really great to have these. And what Tay and I have just briefly talked about is if after your conversation you feel inspired to just write a couple of paragraphs down about an insight or really anything that's kind of living in you through this conversation, please do so and forward that to Taya. Taya will kind of be gatherer of the harvest. And if you indicate on it whether you're happy for that to be shared or not, then we will share those where that's been stated. And I think it's a really great thing to have that echo come back in. So if you feel inspired, pen to paper or finger to keyboard or, you know, whatever, colors to sketch pad, that would be great. That's all from me, Taya.
Thank you, Jonathan. So, yeah, anyone who wants to share anything, feel free to send it to me via email or paper mail or whatever, and let me know whether you would like it to be shared with the rest of the Educators Collaborative. I also want to mention that this is a collaborative that we're hoping to become more and more collaborative. So if you have enjoyed this call or the other calls, you might want to think about, are there any topics that you might want to bring to the group? As I think everyone knows, a lot of what's great about these is the small group conversations, so you don't have to be an expert. But so if anyone is interested in bringing a topic to a call and helping facilitate it, please let me know as well. As I said before, if there's anyone who wants to continue the conversation now, we do have more time we can allow on the call. So if you'd like to do that, please press 2 on your dial pad, and I'll put you in a new breakout group. And if you need to leave, that's fine too. And lastly, I hope that we will see many of you at the conference in November, November 13th to 16th in Louisville, Kentucky. We will be having a meetup of Educators Collaborative along with some great workshops from Jonathan Code and others. So hope to see you there. And thank you very much.